So, in terms of the structure of our journey, we're going to start with a book that I wrote that's called The Soul's Journey to Wholeness. And this was really an important book for me that I wrote about five or 6 years ago when I was having a lot of experiences and reading a lot and feeling a lot and learning a lot about the soul, the part of us that moves from lifetime to lifetime. That idea was very familiar with me, but it had never been a big part of my path. And suddenly I started to realize that this is really important. And it's really important because of what I was saying earlier. Ultimately, our soul, the part of us that exists from lifetime to lifetime, is on a journey to the divine, to wholeness, to fulfillment. And it's in most esoteric traditions, the idea being that spark of divinity in you came from the divine, from the wholeness, and it's on a journey back. It resulted in a succession of lifetimes on a journey back. And what became so important to me was realizing that. And at a soul level, we're all on a different journey. You know, I came from a tradition where the journey was mapped out from A to Z. And the idea was this was the path, this was the right path, and everybody should be on this path. And if it wasn't working for you, there was something wrong with you because this was the path. And it never really resonated with me that that would be the case. And over time, it just resonated less and less. And it eventually became completely clear to me that we're all on a different journey. And the path, that path of my former community worked pretty well for me. And I accelerated along that path pretty well. But that was luck. I just happened to have ended up in a teaching that worked for what my soul wanted. It wasn't an indication of higher development or something more profound about me. It was an indication that the fit between what that teaching was and what I needed was a good fit. And some other people that I knew were deeply developed had struggled a lot with that path. But it wasn't because there was something deficient about them. It was because it wasn't the right path. That wasn't what their soul needed at that time. And that when I started to see that, it made so much sense. And so the soul's journey to wholeness is all about the fact that we are on different soul paths. And at this moment in our growth, this particular lifetime was developed to serve the soul in some particular capacity. And our spiritual goal is not to get to the top of the mountain or not to go the furthest. It's to meet the needs of the soul at this moment. And that might be one thing for me and something else for Annette and something else for Carol. We're not all the same. And so it just became so valuable to me to relax the idea that there was anything like a single path. Because then, rather than focusing your attention on following the path, you know, the one path that's the right path, your attention starts to go to how do I hear what my soul wants from me? How do I hear my own soul's longing? And that's why the second book that we're going to use is a book called Sankalpa and the Realization of Your Soul's Purpose, which I just finished writing last month. But it's work I've been doing with a practice called Yoga Nidra. And I'm sure that we'll be doing some Yoga Nidra in next year's intensive because it's become such a powerful practice for me. It's really become my main practice in terms of this mystical vision dimension of things. And Sankalpa is the Hindu word for your soul's purpose. And so this book that we'll be looking at in our second module is really all about listening. How do you hear your sankalpa? How do you articulate it in words in a way that's powerful, that speaks to you powerfully? It doesn't really matter if it speaks to anybody else. What matters is that it speaks to you, that it resonates with you in a way that inspires you and moves you forward. And when that sankalpa gets activated and the energy of that purpose starts to move you, well, then, as I said, this gets a little weird. So I wrote a book, which is really just my commentary on a book by Sri Aurobindo called, I called the book Visions and Symbols. The fact is, that's actually two chapters in a much bigger book of Sri Aurobindo's that's very relevant to this, because it's all his teachings on how do you start to navigate in those spiritual realms. Once you enter them and you start moving, how do you, because it gets complicated in there. It's dreamlike, you know, it's just like what we experience in dreams. They're hard to interpret, and but we can get better at it. And in the end, you need to develop your own interpretation for these things. That's really the best interpretations are yours, because you are the one who's feeling how they're affecting you. And Sri Aurobindo gives great advice, and there's a whole list of different symbols that one might encounter in some of these higher realms. But again, his advice is always that your own interpretation is the one that matters. And I loved preparing that book. I did that last year, the beginning of last year, just because I find Sri Aurobindo's work so, it so resonates with me. And then we're going to read a book similar, but a different take by Rudolf Steiner called Knowledge of the Higher Worlds. And really, this is his book about, as he was quite a mystic and had profound access to these higher realms. And Knowledge of the Higher Worlds is all about the practices that get you there, and this incredible idea of the keeper of the gate, which you could imagine as a literal keeper of the gate. But I think I've heard a term that I equate to the keeper of the gate, and it's called the turbulence at the boundary. When we move from one reality into another, there's turbulence, and we have to find a way to move through it. Sri Aurobindo talks about that. Rudolf Steiner talks about it in a more symbolic way. He's symbolically representing it by an actual keeper. And then how do you approach this keeper? What is the qualities you want to bring to the keeper so that they will allow you to pass through this turbulence at the boundary? After we do Steiner, we're going to look at a book called Out of This World. It's a very short book. This one I just finished last month too. This is by Neville Goddard. I didn't write it, but I put a lot of footnotes in this one. Neville Goddard is an amazing Christian mystic of the early 20th century. He's very popular right now. Mainly, he's popular in the realm of manifestation, because he uses this basically the same technique we just practiced together. This sh allowing your body to fall asleep is kind of how he talks about it, and then you enter into a different reality. But he mainly talked about that in terms of entering into alternative realities for your life, like the one where you have whatever, the car of your dreams, or the job of your dreams, or the relationship of, you know, you shift into that reality and you kind of imagine it as already true and you anchor yourself in it. But he does say that the highest use of that method is when you use it for your own spiritual work. And when I first read him a few years ago, I realized, oh, I've been doing that for years in terms of my spiritual work, which is entering this in-between state and imagining some more enlightened version of myself as if it was already who I was. And those things came true. I became that person. And I realized I was doing what Neville Goddard teaches, but I had never heard of him. You know, I was doing it from other sources, I guess. And then we're going to do two books in a row because I want to start to talk about both the reality of higher dimensions, but also something that I speak about as mythopoetic awakening, which is the idea that we narrate our own awakening story to a much greater degree than we think. And this is why how you narrate your story matters. So we're going to read first a book called The Spiritual Implications of Special Relativity, because I use that book to talk about special relativity as it was developed by Einstein and a mathematician named Minkowski, and some alternative ideas about time that were emerging around the same time that eventually were fell out of favor because special relativity became so popular, but they really provide an interesting way for us to start to think about the unfolding of higher dimensions in the reality that we are in, which is a very useful metaphor when speaking about mystical vision. So we're going to talk about it in a more scientific way and a philosophical way with this book, The Spiritual Implications of Special Relativity. And then after that, the next book that we'll be looking at is my novel, Transdimensional Time Travel, because I came to realize at some point, I kind of knew this, but then I realized, oh my God, it's working. I started writing novels in 2015, and one of the things that I did was I started writing novels, and I gave to my characters capacities, spiritual capacities, and powers that I wanted. And so I wrote them into my characters, and it's a way of doing kind of ne what Neville Goddard does, because I would really feel myself in those characters, and I would write the story about how they were pursuing these higher powers and what it was like for them when they attained them. And now, it's been some years, and I look back, I've written, this is my seventh novel, and I think, oh my God, I'm actually developing the same powers that I'm writing about in my characters. Like, I am literally narrating my awakening. And then I did some more research, and I found out, oh yeah, that's a thing. Like, people talk about that. It's not just some kooky thing that happened to me. It's actually something that other people have noticed. So I want to use the novel to talk about that aspect of exploring mystical vision, how we actually narrate our own awakening. And then we're going to look at a really beautiful little book called The Mystic as Creative Artist by Evelyn Underhill. She is a Christian mystic, also early 20th century. And she writes about how the mystic, they go on an inner journey to direct contact with higher realities. But oftentimes, they come back wanting to be able to express those and wanting to be able to share them. And she's really talked a lot about the process, the challenge, and which we all know, the challenge of sharing these higher dimensional experiences, these deeper spiritual experiences, because it's hard to put them in words. But she talks about, and she uses Eastern examples and Western examples of spiritual writing and poetry and dance and music, and how these artistic forms can be encoded with higher potentials so that they can act in a kind of gesturing manner that sort of guides people's attention to the same place that the mystic is creating the art from. And we'll deepen that exploration of art by looking at this another book called Concerning the Spiritual and Art by Wassily Kandinsky, the modern artist. He wrote a very small volume called Concerning the Spiritual Art, where he, kind of gave his take on how art can be encoded with higher possibilities, and how the artist can take what's barely visible to them at the edge of their own growth and development, and then can create art from that in different forms in ways that lift people into the same experience, and how art therefore becomes a method of evolution, a mechanism of evolution. It's a beautiful little book. And so I wrote again footnotes for that and an introduction, and we'll be looking at that one. And then we're going to move on and look at another, a lot of these books are short, actually. Another short book called The Symbolism of the Tarot by P.D. Ouspensky. And you know, the tarot is something that I've gotten more interested in over the last few years, but divination tools in general, I've gotten more interested in because, as Ouspensky says in this little book, these kinds of tools, they use something like tarot cards that have symbolic representations on them. But in that interplay with the cards, in that effort of interpreting and feeling into how the symbols of this card are relating to you and the moment of this world. You know, there's like a three-way thing going on. There's you, the card, and your circumstances, and somehow that's all coming together. And the power of that kind of divination is it can give you access to this kind of mystical knowledge that you wouldn't have access to if you just thought about it in the normal way. And it's a beautiful book. And so we'll use that to talk about symbolism and how really everything in the world, if you start to open to this mystical vision, everything is a symbol. I saw something today and I thought, oh, this is a symbol, but I don't know what it's a symbol for yet. It was this teenager on a bike. And I heard him coming behind me, and it sounded so weird. It was going, inch, inch. And I thought, what is going on? And then he went past me very slowly. And his bike, one pedal was broken, so he only had one pedal left. So what he was doing was he was using his foot to like kick the pedal up to the top, and it was making that noise. Da, 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 da. And then he'd put his foot on top of it and push it down hard to get a little steam. And then he'd have to bring it back up. Da, 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 da. And then push it down hard. And I watched him go and I thought, wow, that is so much work and it's so lopsided. And then he was doing that and he had a buddy with him who had a bike that worked. And eventually the buddy was behind him, but he caught up. And as he came up behind this kid with the one pedal, he put his hand on his back and he pushed him. And they both went together for a while. So he got him a good head of steam. And then the other guy on the bike went and the kid, but now he was going so he could go a little faster with his one pedal. And I watched and I thought, oh, that's a symbol. Like that is the universe telling me something. I just don't know what it is yet. So I'm gonna keep holding that vision because it was so marvelous. And that's what we're gonna talk about. How do we read the symbols of life all around us? And the final book that'll finish our exploration is another one that I wrote called The Higher Self-Expression, which is all it's all about what I call becoming an artist of possibility. It's all about finding ways to communicate and share our deepest mystical visions, our deepest understandings of reality in words, in art, in dance, in music, in entrepreneurial ventures, in anything that can become that can be created can be encoded with our higher realizations and mystical visions, if we figure out how to do it. And in that book, I talk about some many different interesting examples of people that I see as artists of possibility. So some of them are spiritual figures, of course, but a lot of them are artists, writers, philosophers, and even a guy named Jeff Clark, who was a big wave surfer, who I think was a very interesting example of a mystic working in a domain that I have no actual experience of, but there was something very mystical going on with him as he was surfing these big waves, you know, every day, that literally in this death-defying event all by himself, way out in the ocean. And so but when I put all these people together, you start to get the sense of what it means to convey these sort of intuitions, but not very well formed intuitions that we have of higher potentials. Like my sense that those kids were a symbol. It's kind of flimsy, but I know if I work with it, it'll get clearer, and eventually I'll be able to articulate it. And the same thing with all of the people in this book. And so that'll be the last part of the program.